let's preview the 2024 Twins season. Bobby Nightingale from the Star Tribune joins me right now to do just that. Bobby, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing this. Season's just around the corner. I wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, I've had both you and Phil Miller, your beat partner, on a few times this spring already. This is maybe a little bit of a different exercise, though, right? Like this is kind of take me through the 6 month journey that is the regular season. How might this play out for the Twins? What do you feel like the strengths and weaknesses are? What did we learn, if anything, from the spring? And kind of what kind of confidence level do they bring north with them for this opening series in Kansas City on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, they're still viewed as the division favorites, I think, kind of like by betting markets, internally belief. I mean, they feel like they can build off last year's playoff run. So you can sense that optimism. I feel like it's been there. Spring training in terms of like positional battles, there wasn't really much there. I mean, there was some health questions and some guys that'll start the season on the injured list. But, I feel like once they made that Manuel Margot trade kind of a week into spring training, it was like, okay, we have our position players all set. The rotation, other than Louis Varland filling in for Anthony DeSclafani, who's injured, you know, that hasn't changed. So I feel like the bulk of the roster has been pretty much set since they got to camp. And you can tell there's a lot of optimism in terms of the next 6 months, what that provides after what they did last year.
Now, Bobby, before we go too deep on our conversation, you caught up with Royce Lewis and Carlos Correa, two players who will figure prominently in the Twins' plans this season. Their health, their production will tell a big part of the story on how far the Twins are able to go this season. You just caught up with them generally about, you know, the season ahead, how the spring went, what they're looking forward to. Let's play a couple of those clips quick. The first one, Royce Lewis, and then the second one, Carlos Correa.
Man, I've been really happy just to be out there every day and give myself an opportunity to perform and be available for the team. And it's been a lot of fun. I want to do this all year long.
As a team, I mean, position player group, you guys made it through the spring healthy. I mean, is it exciting just thinking like the possibilities, like Byron's back healthy, Carlos's foot's healthy? I mean, kind of the possibilities for the lineup.
Yeah, for majority of our guys, you know, it's special. I think when any team's able to be fully 100% healthy, I mean, it's a talent. That's another tool in the bag for you guys to be available. So the fact that we're all available and we have so much depth to be able to, you know, win games even if we're not, it's impressive, and we're very excited.
And for you guys as a whole, just your offense, I mean, everyone's healthy going into the season. What do you think that does for, you know, a healthy Royce, a healthy Byron, a healthy you?
It's a great lineup. It's a great lineup that we have. And, you know, we want to put everything together in order for us to have a great year as a team, especially offensively, and, you know, help our pitchers out a little bit.
What do you think is their greatest source of optimism, and what should be their biggest source of optimism at this point? Are those two things different?
Yeah, I think the offense gives them the most optimism just in terms of Byron Buxton got through spring training healthy, and what that could do for the offense. Also, you know, Carlos Correa dealt with plantar fasciitis for most of last year, dealt with it from May onward. So he's healthy. And then Royce Lewis, I mean, this time last year, he was a huge question mark. That they were hoping to get him back by the All-Star break, and he made it back by May and made a huge impact at that by the time the playoffs rolled around. So, I mean, they view if those three guys can stay healthy, that's kind of the ceiling where they feel like they could jump from, you know, 85, 86 wins to 90 plus wins if all those three guys can stay healthy and kind of live up to the expectations that they've done either in their career or for Royce Lewis, kind of what's projected in front of them. So I think that's their greatest source of optimism. And then also, you know, the rotation. I know you lose Sonny Gray, you lose Kenta Maeda. There's been a lot of question marks surrounding that group. But if you talk to the pitching coaches, you talk to the individual pitchers, I mean, there's a lot of optimism in terms of Pablo Lopez thinks he can take a step forward. Joe Ryan thinks he's better, kind of what he showed in the first half of last year. Bailey Ober feels like he can be that steady guy. There's a lot of internal belief on what Chris Paddock can provide. He'll be on not like an innings limit, but they'll manage his innings as much as they can. You know, he'll be the last starter to make a start pitch in the fifth game. So, but they have a lot of faith that he could kind of fill what Sonny Gray did last year. And then Louis Varland, you know, it's kind of his big chance to start, and he if he doesn't want to be a reliever, you know, this is kind of the big opportunity for him. So there's a lot of belief in the starting rotation, despite losing two key members of that starting rotation that carried him last year.
I have a belief that they're going to miss Kenta Maeda more than they think. I think they know they're going to miss Sonny Gray. I think they're going to miss Kenta Maeda more than they think, but that can be mitigated if they don't have to dip too deep into the depth. Now, that was the real kind of that's where it hurts to lose Anthony DeSclafani, at least right away, right? Like, you're thinking, okay, you've at least got this depth with Varl and kind of a little bit of a known commodity, started a bunch of games last year, even though he's young. Now, the real concern for me, I think the 1-5 is fine, especially the top of it is really good with Lopez. You're right, Ryan could take a step forward. He was pitching probably better than anybody for 2 or 3 months of the year last year until he reported the groin issue. My question is, who's 6, 7, 8? And when I talked to Phil Miller the other day, I didn't get a great answer. I want to hear your answer. What happens if they need to call on some of this depth, and will it be okay enough depth to sustain them if unplanned things happen in the rotation?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely worse than it was last year when they had the luxury of stashing Ober and Varland in AAA, and both of them were up pretty quickly. But now it's a lot less proven. You know, Simeon Woods Richardson is throwing harder in camp. I think there's optimism in terms of what he looks like. Pete Mackey, the pitching coach, said he's light years ahead of where he was last year. Rocco Baldelli called him a different pitcher. So, I mean, I almost feel like they view him as kind of like an ascending type guy. It's easy to forget. I mean, he's been around. You know, traded over in the Barrios trade, kind of been a top prospect for a while. He's only 23.
Okay.
So, I mean, I feel like everyone kind of assumes that he's like 28, 29 and kind of shown what he can do, but there is growth that could happen there. So I think there's a lot of internal belief in him. David Fessas, they're probably a top pitching prospect, at least top pitching prospect to AAA. So he'll probably get a chance this year. He has only made 3 starts at AAA in his career, but I think they view him as a guy who, if you needed him to pitch 10 times this year, 15 times, you know, you're going to have some up and downs in there, but I feel like they feel like that'd be mostly up. Brent Hedrick is probably another guy that they'll probably have to count on for innings. He was mostly a reliever last year, and probably will get some spot starts here and there. They could add to, you know, they've been looking at non-roster guys, and now that the season's about to start, they're going to have to look at guys on minor league deals. But there are pitching depth out there. You know, like Dallas Keuchel turned into a guy that gave him, I don't know how many innings, but like a dozen good starts last year that, you know, number 5 quality that got him through the season. So unless there's a catastrophic number of injuries, but I feel like that's baseball too now, is, you know, Cleveland dealt with a lot of pitching injuries in camp. The Dodgers don't have a lot of proven pitching depth. I mean, I think that's just the name of the game now, is starters 6 through 10. Not many teams can feel great about those options. And the Twins, compared to last year, I that's probably the place where they took the biggest step backward.
I know the name David Festa just because I've been reading about him and hearing about him. I don't know what kind of pitcher he is, aside from, you say, a top prospect. I get that. What kind of pitcher is he?
Yeah, he's big and lanky. I mean, he's like 6'6", probably like 180, 190 pounds. So you would think of him like as a small forward in basketball, almost, has that type of body. But throws 96, 97 mile an hour fastball, has good breaking balls that he's been developing. So I don't know if there's like a one wipeout pitch, like Joe Ryan, you know, his fastball is going to play. Pablo Lopez, you know, his sweepers, that's his dominant pitch. I feel like David Fest is probably a little bit more, not one elite pitch, but more well-rounded in that regard. But a guy who's still growing. I think he was like a 13th round pick, I think, or 10th round pick. So one of those guys that kind of developed a little bit later, added velocity a little bit later. And that's the exciting thing for the Twins' perspective, is that he's been able to add velocity each year he's been in the minor leagues.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Bullpen-wise, that's where they've been hit the hardest by injuries. I mean, none of them sound like they're season ending, unlike the DeSclafani injury potentially is, but you're talking about, you know, Joan Duran going to start the year on the injured list. We already knew about Caleb Thielbar with his having a hard time with his hamstring. And then we learned about Justin Topa the other day, one of the other pitcher that came over, the other major league pitcher that came over in the Polanco trade from the Mariners. He's going to start the year injured as well. Where does that leave them bullpen depth wise at the start of the year? And again, I get that these aren't like, you know, 3 or 4 month or season ending injuries. These guys could all be pitching by May. But that said, it's where does that leave them for, you know, a challenging April schedule?
Yeah, I would say losing Duran and Thielbar, especially, Topa was going to have a prominent role, but, you know, Duran and Thielbar, I mean, they were pitching big innings in the postseason last year, counting on them in a big way. So it forces you to probably lean on some guys that you're expecting to pitch in the sixth, seventh innings, and now they're going to have to step up in the, eighth innings probably. So Griffin Jackson in the back, he's been fantastic all spring, looked really good last year too. So him and Brock Stewart, there's a lot of faith in those guys kind of handling the setup man closer duties. I don't know which one will be which or if they'll interchange them, but those are your two back end guys. Steven Okert, you got him over from the Nick Gordon trade, a lefty. He was a big, they used him as their top lefty in Miami for a couple years, but he struggled a little bit last year, which kind of led to his trade. But a guy who's done it in the past, Jay Jackson, who they got from Toronto, put up decent numbers last year, but wasn't a part of their postseason roster. He's probably going to get an early opportunity. But then it's just kind of which relievers stand out. And, you know, that's always the big question mark, like Jorge Alcala, he throws 98. Can he kind of harness that? Cody Funderburk, he was really good in September last year. Can he do it over a full season as the number two lefty in the bullpen now with Thielbar sidelined? Can Josh Staumont, you know, he was really good with the Kansas City Royals a couple years ago, then had surgery last year. Can he be a guy that you can count on? So, I feel like that's kind of the name of the game for bullpens. They're fickle in nature. Volatile from year to year, but they're less proven without some of their main guys. But I don't know if that'll be a weakness or if that'll be time will tell. But I feel like even if they're at full strength, I feel like it still had a chance to be fickle by nature.
This division has not been good for a while, and last year you could say it was more than not good. It was bad. It was really bad. You know, part of what sustained the Twins through kind of a frustrating first 90 to 100 games was just how bad the division was. And the pitching obviously was a big part of holding it together until the offense caught up and they kind of ran away with the AL Central by the end. If anybody's going to challenge them this year in the division, who do you think is their, who's the most legitimate threat right now to them just cruising, putting it on cruise control and even saying 85 to 88 wins is more than enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think Detroit's the first one that comes to mind just based off, I mean, they had a good season against the Twins last year. I don't know what the head-to-head record was, but I know Detroit won more games against Minnesota. I feel like they won that season series pretty handily. But they have a lot of young guys. I mean, that's one where I feel like you can't count on guys to take that linear progression where when guy's good last year, he's definitely going to be good next year. I think that's a scary thing with Detroit. They added Kent Maeda, they added Jack Flaherty, but they didn't really add surefire dominant pitchers. You lose Eduardo Rodriguez, who went to Arizona. I feel like, they showed signs last year, but will all those young guys take a step forward? Will they all stay healthy? And that's kind of the thing with Cleveland. I mean, I remember Cleveland 2 years ago when they won with that really young team. Everyone felt like, okay, they're going to be really good for a long time. And then last year was kind of a disaster for them injury-wise, and their offense didn't score runs. And now Cleveland, I mean, maybe this year's the year where some of their young guys take another step forward, but they've had a lot of pitching injuries in camp, kind of like the Twins. So they're another wild card. But, I still feel like the Twins, if every team stayed healthy, always health is always the big question, but if every team stayed healthy, I feel like the Twins are pretty big favorites in the Central this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Fangraphs has like Cleveland and Detroit as kind of the nearest competitors, but still projected to win like 5-6 games fewer than the Twins. Royals, yeah, I don't know. I mean, show me that, I'll believe it. You're right. Detroit won that season series over the Twins 8-5 last year. Yeah, they weren't as dominant in the division last year as they maybe have been, although they did well against the Royals in White Sox, but end up losing the season series to the Guardians and to Detroit. What you were just saying now does strike me too. Like, is that a cautionary tale for the Twins? Maybe not so much pitching wise, because I feel like starting pitching, at least, you know, unless there's injuries, that usually translates reasonably well. But, you know, guys like, you know, even guy like Royce Lewis, who, you know, I would not predict a slump for him, but he hasn't had a ton of at bats yet. He hasn't played a full season. Edward Julian, Matt Wallner, who's had a tough spring, like guys like that. Is there a danger in a regression from some guys who maybe overperformed or performed beyond expectations last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think you always have to, even from a team perspective, take that into account. Edward Julian's looked great this spring. But, I mean, you look at the guys behind them, I feel like they have ready-made depth if those guys ended up struggling. Like Brooks Lee, you know, he's dealing with a back injury right now. Probably will start the season in AAA's injured list. But a guy who could play shortstop if Carlos Correa went down, could play third base if Royce Lewis was injured. If Edward Julian struggled, he could play second base. You know, so I feel like that's good depth there. Trevor Larnach right behind Matt Wallner. If Matt Wallner's struggles continued into the season, he's done better the last couple of weeks, Matt Wallner. And you look at his numbers against right-handed pitching last year, you know, kind of the advanced numbers, that none of them say he, you know, got lucky or anything. So I'm pretty bullish on Matt Wallner and what he could do this year. But I mean, in the back of your mind, it has to be, if those guys struggle, you know, in their second year, it's always hard to do it in the second year when the scouting reports are all on you. You know, what if Ryan Jeffers took a step backwards, but Christian Vasquez has had a really good spring and looks like he's hitting better, he's had a really good defensive spring where he's thrown out a ton of runners. So I feel like they have kind of baked in internal depth, kind of like they did last year, position player wise, where if there was a step back, if there were injuries, they're in an okay spot.
Are you surprised that the roster is relatively intact? I mean, I know they traded Polanco, which is a big deal, and, you know, they got some prospects, got some pitchers in return, but, you know, you kind of went into the offseason hearing Polanco and or Kepler. You know, there's a notion of maybe a Vasquez trade, although you can never have too much catching depth. It's just more the salary and their financial reality, especially if he's going to be a part-time player. But, you know, they really didn't make a ton of major offseason moves. And the Polanco trade's the centerpiece. So Santana's a, you know, a pretty low leverage signing, even though he's probably going to get a lot of at bats. Again, I don't imagine you want to change a lot when you win a playoff series for the first time in a while. But, you know, some subtractions, and maybe not as many, like, not as much of a infusion, or not as much kind of mixing it up as maybe I thought there would be with the trade market.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you look at your bench, you know, Christian Vasquez is going to make $10 million this year. Kyle Farmer is going to make $6 million. You know, both of those guys are, you know, starting the season as backups. I mean, that's kind of a luxury that most teams, when you're saying cut $30 million in payroll, aren't going to keep around. So I'm surprised there probably wasn't a little more roster turnover. But, you know, like Kepler, I think the Twins really value him highly. You know, there's not really AAA outfield depth behind Trevor Larnach that, you know, was going to be able to step in and kind of fill that void. Whereas if Brooks Lee was an outfielder, maybe they would have been more interested in making that type of trade. So I can see it in one sense, you know, like Willie Castro, could he fill that Kyle Farmer void if Kyle Farmer wasn't around? I think to some degree. But Kyle Farmer gives you a lot of backup in terms of if you need him to start at shortstop or, you know, platoon with Edward Julian at second base. He hits really well against left-handed pitching. Christian Vasquez, if Ryan Jeffers does have a step back, not saying that'll happen, but, you know, he looks really good. He's really determined this year, and he's won, you know, two World Series titles. You know, you don't really have that pedigree, and, you know, that helps your pitchers as well when you have two veteran catchers who pitchers like throwing to. So I feel like they kind of emphasize not just, you know, what the lower payrolls, what that could have been, but kind of guys that have won in the past and keeping those guys around.
Royal Credit Union smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Few more things for you, Bobby Nightingale, as we get ready for the Twins season 2024. I mean, they've had they've won three of the last five division titles. They've made the postseason 4 of the 7 years under the Derek Falvey, Thad Levine era. And of course, those five that I talked about, that spans the Baldelli as manager era. That said, they took a step last year. They've got to be hungry for another step, but that's hard, right? How are they, I just kind of feel like when you said this, the linear progression doesn't always happen. I feel like I'm kind of like instinctively as a Minnesotan, I'm like always bracing for the bad thing to happen, or like the thing, hey, this team looks pretty good. They should be good on paper. Got a few injuries. Yeah. They got some depth problems, but they should be pretty good. I think Twins fans are trying not to be pessimistic, but there's this thing in the back of in Minnesotans' minds. It's like, what could go wrong? So I guess maybe you can provide the counterweight to that. What can go right this year, Bobby? What could go right this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rocco Baldelli's, said it a few times in terms of just there are a lot of high quality players on the team. Like Carlos Correa, you could make the arguments the top five shortstop in the game. Royce Lewis, I mean, if he does what he did last year for an entire season, one of the best third basemen in the game. Byron Buxton, when he's healthy, is one of the best center fielders. Pablo Lopez showed he could be a postseason ace. Duran, when he's healthy, is one of the better closers out there. So, I mean, there are a lot of guys that you look at, like, in terms of where they rank at their position, if they stay healthy, they are one of the best at their position, which gives you got to have talent to win. And I do feel like there's talent there. Talking to the players just about last year, I mean, all of them keep bringing up the Target Field atmosphere, how much fun that was to play in, how much they want to return to that. I do think that there is something to, like, having that experience in the back of your head, being like, I do want to return and have that experience. I heard a lot of players say over the last couple of days just about how – they'll start the season in Kansas City, but they're more excited for the Target Field home opener, just being knowing what the playoffs were like, and just kind of wanting to feel that environment again, a week into the season. So I do think there's a genuine, star power when they're healthy, that other teams in the American League Central can't match up with, obviously with health being the big caveat.
Right. Major League Baseball wide, and there's already been a couple games. There's already been some storylines that Major League Baseball probably would prefer not to have with everything that's going on with Ohtani. Just in general, what are the we had the pitch clock last year. That was the big story, the kind of the big changes, the bigger bases, things like that. What do you see as kind of the baseball wide storylines? Whether it's teams, whether it's, I know they're taking another couple seconds off the pitch clock when runners are on base, things like that. Can we get it down to 5 seconds, by the way? Can we play games in like less than an hour at some point? No, I don't want that. I'm just kidding. But like, what do you see as the league-wide storylines right now?
I feel like one that hasn't really been talked about yet is I feel like there's more parity than in some previous years. Like I view like the Atlanta Braves and the Los Angeles Dodgers. I feel like they're in their own tier, but like the American League, there's not really a dominant team. Texas Rangers coming off the World Series title, but they only won 86, 87 games in the regular season last year. And then you look at the rotation, like Jacob deGrom's injured, Max Scherzer's injured. They lost Jordan Montgomery from the postseason run last year. So, I mean, I don't even know if they're viewed as the division favorites. The Baltimore Orioles, there's a lot of excitement around them, but the Yankees might be without Gerrit Cole for a while. So, I mean, I just feel like you have two dominant teams and then this huge, huge gap where, there are rebuilding teams, the Chicago White Sox, the Oakland A's. But I do feel like there's this huge, like, who's the best team in the American League? I feel like that's a question that's up in the air and that usually hasn't been the case. Usually kind of like the National League, you'd have two teams from each side that, okay, they're better than everyone else. And I feel like you have those two National League juggernauts, and then the rest of the league is kind of jumped behind them.
That's interesting. I didn't really think about that, but I mean, I guess the Twins could try to stake their claim to that. It's going to be hard in this division. I think I feel like even when they were, routinely winning the AL Central back in the 2000s, there was always this kind of this lingering whisper like, yeah, but how good are they really? And then they go to the playoffs and they get demolished. This team is definitely built differently than that. I think they've taken better steps to be a team that could compete in the postseason. They realize what it takes to compete in the postseason: home runs, pitchers who can strike guys out, quality arms that you can just keep throwing out there, understanding that postseason baseball is a little different. Are there anything like looming, any kind of like I always feel like there's something on the horizon for baseball, whether it's, you know, automatic balls and strikes at some point, whether it's kind of, you know, labor stuff. What do you think? What do you think we'll be talking about it, you know, outside of the game this year that maybe we're not thinking of right now?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I mean, the rule changes, you know, the pitch clock will be a little bit faster, but I haven't really noticed in spring training in terms of, it's not like there's been more pitch clock violations because of it. I do wonder maybe more stolen bases this year now that players are a little bit more used to, okay, I felt like in the second half teams were running a little bit more. I wonder if that'll carry over for an entire season and we see more stolen bases. But yeah, I'm not sure what kind of the last year was so obvious with the rule changes that was clearly going to be the storyline that carried throughout the year. But I mean, I don't expect games to be dramatically faster than they were. I don't expect it to be dramatically different. The Twins, I mean, and, you know, they struck out at the all-time record last year. I don't think that'll happen again. I don't think they'll strike out quite as often this year when you take away, you know, Joey Gallo and Michael A. Taylor and replace them with some, you know, Carlos Santana doesn't strike out that much. So I feel like that'll change for them. But other than that, I mean, pitching injuries, I feel like has been kind of the dominant story in spring in terms of, you know, pitchers. Some pitchers believe it's the pitch clock. Some, you know, I saw one of the surgeons said pitchers throwing more sweepers. He thinks that's the root of the cause, root of injuries. So maybe pitcher injuries will be, you know, kind of the thing. But I feel like that kind of that's like a cyclical thing where people realize how important starting pitching is.
I'm glad you brought up strikeouts. That's my final point. Yeah, you're right. They set the record last year. Whether it was by intention or coincidence, they have, you know, subtracted some of their strikeout guys, added guys who put the ball in play a little more, like Santana, like Margot. Where do you think they stand organizationally on strikeouts? Because the data tells you different things than your eyes tell you sometimes. How do you think they feel still about, you know, the shame versus the value of, you know, the shame of the strikeout, which is generational, versus the value of hitting the ball really hard when you do hit it?
Yeah, I don't think they've changed their outlook or views on it at all. You know, just they brought in a few different players that, you know, you take away Joey Gallo, that's a lot of strikeouts that are off the table. But I still think they view it as if we lead the league in homers like they did last year, you know, they're going to be in a really good spot. They think, you know, power wins games in the postseason. It's kind of proved itself over the last few years. And, you know, it's just really hard with the pitching these days. I mean, you talk to hitters, it's just really hard to string three singles together or even three hits together against a reliever who's throwing 100 miles an hour. I actually talked to Joey Gallo a few days ago about just his season with the Twins.
I saw that,
And he was talking about, like, if a reliever comes in and he's only throwing 95, we race the bat rack these days just because all the hot guys that throw 100. So that's just kind of the name of the game in terms of scoring. But that's where I wonder where if base running will become a little bit more important for stolen bases, just in terms of instead of thinking you have to get three hits to score a run, maybe you only need one if a guy can swipe second and then put himself in a position to score on a single.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, we'll see. I mean, it's, you know, just right around the corner now. There is some expectations that just haven't been here for a while, right? Like, I think forever people have been kind of like, wake me up when it's the postseason, because they haven't won the series. Now they did. They won, you know, three playoff games last year, won a playoff series. So it's a different feeling, but it carries a different kind of weight now, right? Because now it's like, okay, can you do that again? Can you take the next step? I think they feel like they can. Feeling like you can and doing it are entirely different things, especially when you got to get through the grind of 6 months of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I mean, I think they view themselves as division favorites. If they don't win the division, I feel like that'd be a disappointing season. If they don't win at least one playoff series, I think they'd view that as internally as a disappointment. So, yeah, I mean, there are different levels of expectations they have to carry, but they also feel like, you know, they took a huge step forward just getting that monkey off their back last year, that, you know, they are able to take a step forward. If you subscribe to the belief that, you know, you have to learn how to win in the postseason by losing a series, you know, this is kind of where they have to take their step.
All right, Bobby, appreciate it. Phil Miller's got the coverage from Kansas City, but you will be in Milwaukee, and then I'm sure all hands on deck once they return home for the home opener next week. Bobby, appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.